I'm Bill Littlefield, and it's time for three stories you should know.
William on the drive. Pull up, pull up. Got it! She got it! She got it!
And that is the sound of a 111-game winning streak coming to an end. Mississippi State's victory over UConn in the women's Final Four is where we're going to start this week. My guests are Bleacher Report's Eric Malinowski and Sports on Earth's Will Leach, both via Skype. Welcome back to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Hello.
Eric, you're on first.
As we said, Morgan Williams with the shot up, and long live UConn women's basketball. As you said before, they won 111 straight games. 108 of those were by double digits. It was 867 days in between losses. This was an incredible achievement that we should soak in and we should appreciate for all of its merits. I love that it ended on a very round number. I'm going to be able to remember 111 forever. 112 would have required a little bit more synapses firing, so I appreciate them doing that just for me. But on the other hand, I wonder, as good as this winning streak obviously was for the popularity of women's basketball, I'm curious, was this sort of the perfect time for this to end? Like, I feel like there was a part of me that this morbid curiosity is going to reach 200 wins, 250. What other round number can they hit? But at the same time, you know, we always talk about the virtues of parity and competition and things like that. And it was so unbelievably dramatic. I was covering a Warriors game in Oakland, and along press row, we all had our laptops open, streaming to ESPN, watching to see how this incredible game was going to end. So I feel like either way, it probably ended at the right time. But on the other hand, I wonder how far could they have possibly taken it?
First of all, I'd like to note, by the way, what Eric talks about is totally true and always worth keeping in mind in sports coverage. People covering the game are always watching a more interesting game on their laptops while the game is covering.
That's the rule.
That's absolutely true. Secondly, yeah, to me, the best part about this ending is that it ended on the biggest stage possible. If this would have been like a tight game against Syracuse in mid-December, I don't think anyone would have cared. It would have been noted like, oh, that's interesting. Oh, well, I had to end sometime. As for the idea of like how we'll remember this, frankly, it's Connecticut. They may do this again. For me, that is one of the great things about Connecticut and great things about any sort of favorite like that. They are polarizing. Like Gino Auriemma is a controversial figure for a lot of people. He actually had some quotes even in the last week where he talked about, I'm not sure women want to coach, that was to the point that his daughter actually went on Twitter and said, ugh, Dad, stop it. And you know, nobody else in women's college basketball has that kind of megaphone. You know, we always talk about how we want parity and we want everything to be fair, everyone to be equal. But what we really want are heroes and villains.
Well, Will, I really like one point, particularly like one point that you made, and that is the idea of a daughter going on Twitter to say to her dad, hey, Dad, stop it.
Yes.
I wish that would happen in at least one other context. But I think the thing that we have to keep in mind is that all this talk about Connecticut and what they've done and what they might do next, notwithstanding, credit needs to be given to the players on Mississippi State for beating Connecticut and then to the players on South Carolina's team for beating Mississippi State. Those were terrific wins for each of those two teams. And hey, here we are talking about women's basketball. So the whole constellation of events was obviously very good for the game.
Yeah, I completely agree. I feel like we need to remember the name of Morgan Williams. You know, I mean, give her all the ESPYs, give her an Emmy, you know, give her anything that she qualifies for. But we need to remember the name of Morgan Williams forever. And the more we discuss it, I think the more we can appreciate it over time.
All right, Will, it's your turn.
Well, one of my common arguments is that if you are a consumer of sports or a sports fan, this is, in fact, the best time to do that. You can watch any game that you want at any point from any of your devices. You have every statistic you might want. I can yell at a player on Twitter and he can call me an idiot back. It's amazing the connection that we have. There's one thing, however, where it's so much worse, and that is in college sports recruiting. My beloved Illinois Fighting Illini just hired their new coach, Brad Underwood, and their big recruit, a kid named Jeremiah Tillman. Tillman had committed to Illinois, had not committed to Illinois, had committed to Illinois, and this week announced he was not going to Illinois. Now, in any sane society, what a 17-year-old does about going to college or not going to this college or going to this college, am I going to go here, am I going to go here, we would not only not care, it would be actively bizarre and terrifying to care. Instead, he's getting yelled at by Illini fans. He's getting begged to come by fans of other teams. You know, my father is a big Illinois basketball fan like I am, but he never pays attention to this. He never has any idea who recruiting is. He just watches the first game of the season and, hey, there's new guys on my team now. Let's check these guys out. That is how we should all watch sports. We will all be be such happier people if we pay no attention to recruiting, if we leave these kids alone and just wake up the first day of the season and say, hey, awesome, look who's on my team now. Go, new guy on my team.
Eric, are you on board with this, the idea that we should pay no attention to recruiting unless we are salaried assistant coaches?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like this is sort of the ridiculous everyday underbelly of college sports that, like, it just really doesn't even deserve our attention, really. There's just so much more that we can get upset and outraged about. You know, this one can definitely be sort of kept down the bottom of the ladder.
It is a challenge to make fun of only one facet of the machinery of college basketball. There's always a risk that once you start pulling on that single thread, everything connected with this absurd spectacle will unravel, which will be okay with me. Actually, we could rebuild a better one, I bet. But, Will, I do take your point. Now, what would you have the powers that B do about it? Is there any way to discourage people going so nuts about recruiting?
Well, the worst part about this, of course, is once you've opened up the box, you can't shut it. If you ask me what I want the powers to be to do, I want them to put Jeremiah Tillman back on Illinois. Like, that's the worst part about this, is I'm as bad as everybody else. Because once you start paying attention, you just can't help but look at it. And the one thing I would say, though, this is without question true. There is nothing worse, and really not much sadder, than like a middle-aged guy going on Twitter and saying, oh, yeah, you betrayed us, 17-year-old who didn't actually come to the school and has no connection and will not be paid if he does go there.
There's a million reasons to not tweet, and that one is tied with all of them.
All right, we're going to put basketball in the rearview mirror and turn to hockey because the NHL has announced that they're not going to send their players to the Olympics in 2018. This is, of course, because the team owners don't want to build a hiatus into their season every 4 years. It's a bad decision. Players who like to compete for their countries are going to be disappointed. Fans who would rather see the best players at the Olympics, they'll be disappointed. The NHL, of course, is also missing an opportunity to publicize its sport, which is in great need of publicizing. The owners have presented themselves by doing this as greedy and inflexible. It's bad public relations as well. Olympic hockey before the pros ever went would sometimes give us a heck of a show. I give you, for example, 1980, when the U.S. played Russia in not the finals, remember, but the semis. But now, I hate the metaphor about you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube, but that's sort of where we are on this. The NHL has been there. How can they say, no, we're not going to go there anymore? I think it's a bad decision. Anybody want to take the other side on that?
I don't know if I would take the other side, but I remember I was in Sochi in 2014, and there was like a press conference with the head of the IOC and Gary Bettman, the NHL commissioner, were having this discussion about having players there. And the head of the IOC said, well, you know, for most of these players, obviously winning a gold medal is one of the best things they can ever do. And Gary Bettman interrupted, actually, it's the Stanley Cup. The Stanley Cup is the best thing they can ever do. And first off, it was strange because I felt like sympathy and on the side of someone that works for the International Olympic Committee, which is not a position I recommend anyone ever
be
on. I know it's a terrible place, but to me, that is a large part of this. Like, there is still a sense from the NHL that the players are ours. To me, the best example of how much a mistake this is frankly the World Cup of Soccer. Like, there's nothing gets people more excited, particularly about here in the United States, about the MLS than the World Cup. It, sure, it messes up the season in the Premier League. It messes up a lot of seasons, but it's so worth it. So for them to not be able to see the forest for the trees from that, what they're really doing is saying, we think this is more important to these players than the Olympics, and players tend to not like having that told to them.
I'm a little bit torn on this because, you know, I, as an alum of Boston University, you brought up 1980. It is ingrained into my DNA to want to root for, you know, high level, you know, collegiate players in the Olympics and kind of see what they can do. On the other hand, I think back to like the 2010, you know, Olympic hockey final. I have like I couldn't be in front of a television, but I have very visceral memories of trying to find a radio feed, you know, somewhere and just trying to hear whatever updates I could. And I just think that if we didn't have professional players in there, I just don't think that that sort of level of interest would spread out the way it does. So this is what people, the modern hockey fans, especially international hockey fans, have come to expect. And I think it raises the whole level of the game and it makes for a better product ultimately.
I think you've made my argument very well. And I hope that Gary Bettman is listening. That's all I can say. My guests for this week's edition of Three Stories You Should Know have been Bleacher Report's Eric Malinowski and Sports on Earth's Will Leach. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
A pleasure.